Tonight's seminar is Evangelism as a Way of Life. If you've come expecting me tonight to do a whole list of this is how you do evangelism, and this is how you speak to someone about Jesus, and a big strategy of evangelism, well then you're going to be sorely disappointed, okay? Because we're really going back to basics about evangelism. And then we will move on to more practical stuff. So I'm going to pray and then we'll do some group work and I'll give some handouts in a little while. Father, do thank you for this time together. We pray that as we look at evangelism as a way of life, you won't just see it as a tag on to other things we do, not a program to be followed, but something that we live by. And we pray, Lord, please, that we might help each other learn more how to do this effectively, to love Jesus more, and that in turn would make us love people more. If we ask in his name, amen. Okay, what you need to do, just in your tables, I want you to think about, when you hear the word evangelism, what goes through your mind? What sort of things do you imagine as evangelism? And what do you feel when someone says, we're going to do a bit of evangelism, or we're going to do some evangelism? So just a couple of minutes to discuss that. Okay, right, let's draw those chats to a conclusion. If we just have something from each table about basically what do you think of when you think of evangelism, how do you feel, just what your discussions were. So if we pick on that table over there first, remember it's your answer, so it's not right or wrong, it's how you feel.
Think of evangelism sometimes as just talking to people about the gospel, but then also sometimes it can associate with events, so doing an evangelistic event or an outreach event.
Yeah, so events. And how do you feel how do you feel when you have to think about I'm going to do evangelism?
I feel excited.
Okay, someone who feels excited. Right, next table.
We sort of brainstormed. So something like the evangel being good news and the ism being the ism. We discussed the ism for quite a long time. And again, exciting, scary as well, we said sometimes.
Okay, so
the spreading of good news, communicating of.
Yeah, in some way, communicating good news can be scary and can be exciting at the same time. Richard's table or Anne's table?
Or.
Oh, she's just a girl. I like what you said about feeling worried that you're not going to sort of be able to answer the questions properly or.
Yeah. So worried that someone might ask you something and you can't answer it, or you make a right mess answering it. Yeah.
I'm worried about not pleasing people, putting tension in your relationships.
Yeah. Okay. So because you'll upset someone, there might then be tension. Yeah. Okay. Next table. You got anything to add?
Evangelism being like events and things. So it kind of involves like stepping out and kind of sometimes getting out of our comfort zones. But sometimes there's a danger that some things can be a bit cringy, or perhaps we get a bit embarrassed about bringing our friends to step.
Yeah. Okay. So again, thinking about events, stepping out of your comfort zone, being aware that it might be cringy, and also that your friends might think you're a bit wacky if it's cringy, or you might be embarrassed by it. Right, anything to add on this next table?
We talked about the description of evangelism, so sometimes it's unhelpful if we define it as being events,
yeah,
without recognising our own responsibility.
Yeah,
sorry, go on. Mark mentioned the importance of people listening.
Yeah.
So are you evangelising if what you're saying is being heard by no one? So was it Roger Carswell's definition of, what was it?
Evangelism is speaking the gospel
whilst
people are listening.
Okay, so definition, evangelism is speaking the gospel whilst someone's listening. Yeah, because, you know, I've seen many an open-air preacher who has been preaching to actually an empty precinct, let alone people just walking past. So is that effective in evangelism? Yeah. Anything to add on this table? No?
Oh, we talked about the worry of trying to say fit everything in and kind of all of the aspects of the gospel, and sometimes the worry of not missing things out or saying things in a way that will be less interesting.
Okay, so the worry of are you going to get everything in, a bit like Anne's worrying about answering it. Anything to add on your table?
Chatted a bit about sort of the fear of rejection.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so the fear of rejection. What we're going to look at tonight is we're going to go right back to basics, not even to what is the gospel, because I'm taking it for granted that people realise that the gospel is all a message of good news about God saving a people for himself. Right. So we're going to go right back to basics. I'm not sure if there's enough handouts for everyone. I did 25, but I think there might be more than 25 of us. So some people might have to share, or if you've come together, it might be worth just taking one between you, if that's okay. So, and then what I want you to do, the first thing on your paper is something called Back to Basics, and I want you to look at the passage from Colossians and then answer the questions, just the questions that are immediately beneath it. Okay, we're going to stop there and look at the answers to from this passage in Colossians. In case you're wondering, it's actually from Colossians 1, so you can look it up when you get back if you want to. So, thinking about it, how's the kingdom described? It's a noddy question. It's there in the passage. Katie couldn't do it. It was too obvious and all, so. How is the kingdom described? Yeah, it's a kingdom of the sun he loves. Really obvious. And then... What is ours and why? Again, another noddy question. It's all there in the passages. Yeah, rescue and redemption. Yeah. What about all the things Paul says about Jesus? Shout some of them out.
Image of the invisible God.
Image of the invisible God.
Sunny loves.
Firstborn over all creation. Before all things.
By him all things are created.
Yeah, creator.
Head of the church.
Yeah, he's head of the church.
Firstborn from among the dead.
Firstborn from among the dead.
Holding everything together.
Yeah, he holds everything together. Now, just in those few verses, there's a common factor, isn't there? What is the common factor? It's really obvious. The answer in Sunday school is always
Jesus.
Right, okay. So the big common thing is Jesus. And when you read those things about Jesus, how does it make you feel? When you read what Jesus is like, what do you immediately think of Jesus? If you're going to try and sum that up, those verses, how would you do it?
Incomprehensible.
Incomprehensible, okay.
He's good.
He's good.
He's big.
Yeah, big.
Powerful.
Powerful.
Sufficient
to save. Okay. Now, when I've studied Colossians with people and I come to this passage, I've often said, Jesus is brill. All right. It's just like, and it is, isn't it? The whole point of Colossians, the next question is, why do you think so much is made of Jesus in this book? And it's because in Colossians, they're trying to be pulled away from the truth of the gospel. It's like, that's okay for now, but you need something else. You need something plus Jesus. And what Paul says is, it's Jesus and only Jesus and nothing else. And back to basics means that actually we get back to Jesus. Okay? Nothing else matters. Your strategy on evangelism doesn't matter. What matters is Jesus, okay? Back to basics, Jesus. The whole Bible is about Jesus. Jesus is the answer to everything, okay? Now, there's a bloke who works in, or used to work for UCCF, and he always used to say, hooray for Jesus, and get everyone to say it when he was studying Colossians. And I think there's something in that, hooray for Jesus. He's absolutely fantastic. And I guess tonight what we're going to do is go back to basics and we're going to go back to Jesus. That's where we start our evangelism, with Jesus. And you'll notice on your page that the first title is Love for Jesus. How is evangelism going to be a way of life? The only way evangelism is going to be a way of life for you is by loving Jesus. Okay? So if you don't love Jesus, and I don't mean that you've got fluttery feelings, but you don't, if you don't go back and remind yourself of how wonderful he is, you're never going to be, make evangelism a way of life. So some of the things we talked about when we went round in groups, I'm scared of what people will think about me. I've got to go out of my comfort zone. You know, my big problem is, oh, people will think I'm a weirdo. And we've got all these excuses for not wanting to do evangelism. And that the heart of the problem is the problem of our heart, and that we don't love Jesus. We just do not love Jesus the way we should. When we love Jesus and we're enthusiastic for him, evangelism begins there. So enthusiasm for Jesus is the beginning of our evangelistic strategy. Nothing else will do. Evangelism is all about Jesus. The Bible is all about Jesus. And if we're going to be good for evangelism, good at evangelism, then we've got to love Jesus. Really basic, isn't it? I don't know about you, but we often talk about the things we love most. Just sit back for a minute and think in your groups about your week. Maybe you want to share it, maybe you don't, but I just want you to think, how much time have you spent talking about Jesus? I guess for Richard, Esther and myself and Matthew, that's a bit of a con, because we spend most of our time talking about Jesus because we're paid to do it. But if we were in another job, think about, how much time have I spent talking about Jesus? Not because I'm paid to do it, but actually because I love him. Just sit maybe in your groups and think about how much time you've spent talking about Jesus because you love him. Okay, I don't want to have a massive discussion about this, because it's not meant to make you on a guilt trip or even to get you to add up time, because that's unrealistic. Gillian made a really good point in our group, not even just how much time have we spoken about Jesus, because we might be in jobs or situations where you cannot do that, but how much time have you even thought about Jesus? I guess, I don't know whether any of you have ever been in love with someone or fancied someone or whatever, and that person is always on your mind, you're always thinking about them, you know, you daydream, where do your thoughts go? To that person. When, you know, you're standing in a queue and or you're in the traffic and you start thinking about that person, or you go over conversations you had, how often do we do that when we think about, do we think about Jesus in that way? Are we more preoccupied with other things? And it really isn't meant to get you on a guilt trip, but when we go back to Colossians and see what he's like, why aren't we in love with him? Why aren't we just so enamoured by him that we want to think about him, we want to talk about him? I guess we've got a battle going on, and I really don't want to make people feel guilty tonight, because I'm rubbish at this, but what I want to do is renew our love for Jesus. We've got to pray that God would soften our hearts so that we'll see how big he is, how wonderful he is, how sufficient he is. And nothing else really matters, does it? Nothing else, no one else matters in the same way that Jesus does. He's got to be first in everything. So if we're going to make evangelism a way of life, we've got to love Jesus. We've got to be enthusiastic about Jesus. And people know when that's real or not, don't they? You can, you know, put it on and think, right, I've got my duty, I've got to do evangelism today, we're doing cold contact at mission, so I've got to go out and do cold contact. But actually, why don't we just want to talk about him? In my household, cricket is spoken about most of the time, not by me. but, you know, I guess for me, I would often think I spend more time thinking about my dog than anyone else, which is, don't tell Adrian. but Jesus isn't at the forefront of my mind most of the time, and I really need to pray that God would soften my heart so that I see how wonderful he is and really love him. Does anyone want to ask any questions on that before we move on to the next thing?
Does that mean it's unhelpful to think about anything other than Jesus?
No, but everything should be thought of in the context of Jesus. if that makes sense. Of course, it isn't unhelpful to think of other things, but always in the light of who Jesus is, what he's done, how he holds all things together. So it's not Jesus is a tag on. Jesus is life and everything else stems from him. So no, but always with, I guess, gospel goggles on or something, you know, gospel glasses, everything's done with that.
So Paula, as we speak about other things, we can do that as subjects in the kingdom of Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And because everything stems from him, doesn't it? Everything is given by him. And so whatever we do it in light of the gospel and in the light of being his redeemed people. And that should impact how we talk, what we talk about, how we view things. Because it's all about Jesus.
Could you give us an example of what that perhaps might look like, a line of thought that that might look like in practice?
Okay, so like something tangible.
Yeah.
I guess I have a problem with trolley rage. Okay, so I can't bear queues. So what does that look like in how I love Jesus? I'm standing in a queue. The old lady in front of me who's riddled with arthritis is taking her time, and I can't understand why she can't empty everything out onto the conveyor belt, why she has to take one thing out, and it's all really slow, when I think the most proficient way to do this would be to do da-da-da-da. And so how do I look at that in the light of I love Jesus? Is actually, this is not my world. I'm not God. Why is my time more important than this lady's time? And if I love Jesus, then I'm more concerned about her than my time. Does that make sense? So when someone cuts in on me in my car, instead of beep, 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 you know, you're so-and-so shaking my fist or whatever, it's like graciously saying, well, actually, you know, maybe that person has got somewhere to get to, more importantly than me. And it's, you know,
excuses for them, just don't get angry at them.
Or, you know, when you just don't know what's happening in people's day and it's trying to be gracious and remembering that God's gracious to us. It means that we forgive people because we love Jesus, because we realise how he's forgiven us. Does that make sense? Is that helpful? Yeah. So that's what it means to love Jesus, I guess. Any more questions on that? Okay, so if evangelism is going to be a way of life, we've got to love Jesus. But then, secondly, love for people. True love will always want to introduce people to our greatest friend. So actually, if we really love people, then we want to introduce them to Jesus. It makes sense, doesn't it? You know, when you're with someone or you've got a friend with you, you introduce them when you meet someone else. That's what we should be doing. So I want you on your tables to think about, how do we practically introduce people to Jesus? How do we practically introduce people to Jesus? What might that look like? Okay, can you draw that to a close? Richard. Okay, anybody want to say how we might introduce people to Jesus? Just some feedback, what you thought were good ways to introduce people to Jesus? Mark Bland had a great one. Come on then, Mark.
Which one?
Mark introduces them through humility.
We got an hour. What, the one about
Paddy? What, which of the men?
We had a couple. We did have a couple. But one of them was alcohol. Always makes people a bit more freer. It brings down the barrier.
So get them drunk as Mark.
No, get yourself a little bit, because it's a lot easier.
That's a good message.
Is that all it takes? You can blur it out. My main one was, I was talking to Mark Harrison about this. People don't do anything. A lot of the time, people don't do anything. You ask your work colleagues, what are you doing this weekend? Nothing. You're kind of like, what are you doing? I'm doing loads, because I'm stupidly busy. And then you tell them all about it, and you just think to yourself, well, why can I not invite these people in to meet my family?
Okay, actually, Mark's made a really good point, and we'll look at that later, actually, that evangelism is a community project, and we'll get onto that later on. So that's a really good way to introduce people to Jesus, is by introducing them to the rest of your Christian family, no matter how weird and wonderful they are, because actually sometimes that's a great witness in itself, that you're like, ooh, you lot knock around together, how odd. Anything else people thought they could do to introduce people to Jesus?
Go to the pub.
Go to the pub.
There's an alcohol theme here.
I'm on your team.
We sit through our everyday life.
Do you want to expand on the Beth through everyday life in... like, you mean just the way you live? Yeah, and I think we talked a little bit about that. It isn't always about what you say, but it's actually the way you live your life. And we talked about that not even just being that you live a good life, because it's very easy then to preach a gospel of good works, I do this, I do that, I'm kind, I'm friendly, but actually in our failures being quick to say sorry, because we know we're forgiven, we can ask for forgiveness very quickly and admit our wrongs quickly, knowing that it's all done. So actually just being able to say, I'm sorry, I messed up, forgive me, so in our everyday lives that's really important. Okay, just, we won't take any more feedback on there, but then you've got a little thing about a bit of evangelism that's gone on, and I want you to just read that and then think, what response does this evangelistic model provoke in you as you read it? Okay, that was in really for a bit of fun, but I guess we all know people who do evangelism like that, and what kind of response does it provoke in you when you see that sort of evangelism? What do people feel? You like it, Matthew? What do people think?
Our group said they wanted to rabbit punch him in the kidneys.
They wanted to rabbit punch him in the kidneys, okay.
I get a bit of a mixed picture.
Yeah.
Because he's quite courageous and to the point.
Yeah.
Which, although it might seem a bit extreme in response to someone being injured by a ball, it paves the way for further conversations.
Yep, so there is definitely some courage, but equally it's like cringy at the same time. Yeah.
Sometimes like words, they, especially in print, like it can seem what it is. Like if you had been there, you might have been the sort of character that could carry off a lot more than we could. And
yeah.
Might have seemed really appropriate.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, and I think in some ways, Esther, you're right about that. It depends, doesn't it, on the person. So a lot of us will know Roger Carswell, who's an evangelist in this country, who gets away with all sorts of things. You know, someone, I was just saying, I remember it as someone saying to him, have you got a light? And Roger goes, no, but I do know the light of the world. And then got into a conversation, and he has the most, like, cringy little one-liners. And yet has seen loads of people saved, has had fantastic conversations. But then he has the gift of evangelism. That's something God has given him specifically. For most of us, this isn't the right way forward. Which brings us on to some of the points Mark was making, but how do we carry on making evangelism a way of life? Love for Jesus, love for other people, but then love for one another, as in love for the church and each other. So I guess church, if I was being asked, I don't know, 10 years ago, if someone became a Christian, they said, do I have to go to church? I might have answered with something like, no, you don't have to go to church, but you know, it's a good thing to do because of this, this and this. Now I'd say to someone, have to go to church, you're part of the church, you've got no choice, because church isn't a meeting we go to, but church is a family that we belong to. And church is a context for relationships. And so therefore, how do we introduce people to Jesus? How do we make evangelism a way of life? By introducing them to our church family. I want you into your groups to think, why is it good for people to be introduced to? And that doesn't mean that they have to come to church to be introduced to your church family, as we heard from Mark. Why is it good to be able to introduce people to a wider Christian network? Why is that so good? Why is that so helpful? A couple of minutes to think about that before we move on. Okay, let's stop there and just thinking about why church, or why introducing people to your church family is one of the best ways of evangelism as a way of life. Why is that a good thing to do? And evangelism being done in the context of that family relationship. What do people say? What were the pluses of that?
You've got the issue of one person sows another reaps, haven't you? So it could be that somebody else is going to have the opportunity to have that.
Yep.
And so it resonates better with you.
Yeah, so one sows, one reaps, and you might bring someone, you've had lots of conversation, but someone else can carry on. Yeah, that's a really good reason. Other reasons? Yeah, you can't do the one another commands on your own, so you can't. Yep, so they can't see them being worked out if you're on your own all the time. Yeah.
We said that if they see a group of Christians together, they'll hopefully see something in all of us that they can't see in their own lives.
Okay.
And hopefully, the only
conclusion that falls is
that's Jesus.
Okay, so Christians together corporately being something different and. What is it that's different about them? Yeah, asking those questions.
If we're inviting people to come and join the new creation, then we should be showing them the first fruits of the new creation being the church. So if we're not showing them the church, then they don't know what the new creation is going to look like.
Yep, that's right. So I guess the picture of the bride in Christ, new creation, but fairly messed up. Picture of it, but at least some sort of glimpse of it. Other things?
We research that just sometimes with relationships after a while, you've reached an impasse, and actually someone in a fresh perspective can,
yeah.
Even just things like, I suppose I've had just people go, can you talk to my friend? I'm scared of offending them. I'm not scared. You can offend them or you like
them.
Okay,
so.
Occasionally that sort of.
Yeah. A fresh perspective on things. Katie, you said something about different gifts or something.
Yeah, sorry, wasn't that the same thing? One of you might be really good at talking, and the other one might be really good at befriending or like getting
outside someone. Yeah. Yeah, so if we're body and we've all got different gifts, you know, you might be rubbish at actually just articulating things, but you're really good at getting alongside someone and them being your friend. You bring them to your church community, and there's someone who's just really good at chatting about Jesus very naturally. And they have great conversations that you could never have, because God has given us different gifts to be able to do that. And I guess things like, I don't know, if you've got someone who's really into philosophy or something, there's bound to be someone in your church who likes having these type of conversations. Other things about church community that really speak?
We were saying about like sacrificial love, so like when people have babies or something, it's quite unusual for them to go on paganism, and that's quite
yeah.
Something that wouldn't necessarily happen normally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's brilliant, Jo. So the whole sacrificial love thing, how we love one another. And that leads nicely on to the final point. Thank you, Jo. That was a great little link. So the last title is Love the Final Apologetic. So love the final answer. It's from something Francis Schaeffer said. I want you to read this passage from John, and then what things immediately strike you about this love, and then I'll sum it up and we'll finish. So have a read of that passage from John and think about that question. Okay, I'm really sorry to stop you when the conversation is so... But it is 9:15, so I'm just going to try and sum some of this up. I wonder if I'd have asked you at the beginning of this seminar what the most effective form of evangelism was, whether you'd have said loving your Christian brothers and sisters. My guess is not many of us, if any, would have said that. But it seems, doesn't it, that this is what Jesus says. It's a command that Jesus gives before he goes to the cross and then is leaving his disciples to do his work. And what Jesus is saying is, this is your badge. This is how the world will know that you're a Christian, if you love one another. That's what makes you stand out above everyone else, is that you have love for one another. It's not an option. It's a command. You've got no choice about it. And it's not that Christians are to love the exclusion of other fellow human beings who are made in God's image, but the primary command is to his disciples for all generations to come, so that we're to love one another. And just quickly, we're going to look at this love only in a couple of minutes. Notice, first of all, that it's love for all Christians, all true Christians. So, it's not just people you like in church, not just people you click with, not just people who you think, oh, they'll be good, they'll be exciting. It's not a pick and choose love. It's a love for all Christians, people of different social classes, people of different races, people who you think are odd or weird. It's a love for all true believers. And that's really challenging, isn't it? Can I ask you, do you have that love for the true believers in our family? Are the people that you actually don't talk to on a Sunday morning because you think they might be hard work? Are the people who you'd rather not have around at your home because, you know, they'll make it smelly or their conversation will be boring? This is not what Jesus says. He says it's love for all true believers. And that's a big challenge for us, isn't it? Are we loving people in our church family at Avenue in the way that Jesus commands, a love for all true believers? Then secondly, look at the quality of that love. The standard of the love is the love of Jesus. Did you see that? He says, as I have loved, so you must love one another. Okay? Can you hear me over there? Because I'm realising I'm having to shout above the noise of night and people. Okay? So the quality of the love is the same standard as Jesus. We know that we can never love like him completely. He's infinite and we're finite. But the love he demonstrated for us is the love that we're to show to one another. That we're to love each other sacrificially. I don't know about you, but there are many times in my Christian life where people have loved me sacrificially. And I can remember particularly when my first husband was really ill and about to die. And then after he died, my parents weren't Christians. But one of the things that they really noticed were the love Christians had for me. People giving money so we could afford a funeral. People just coming round and crying with you. And the thing I think that eventually spoke to my dad was just seeing the way the Christians loved me. They were sacrificial. They gave of themselves. So the love that we have for other people has to be the same love that Jesus has for us. But then notice that the last thing about this love is that based on the love that we have for one another, Jesus gives the world the right to judge us. So in verse 35 he said, by this all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Jesus is basically saying to the world, you've got my authority to look at the way Avenue Church love each other and decide whether or not there are really true believers there. Isn't that challenging that the world should look on us, see how we love each other and judge us? Because that's what Jesus is saying. You can judge people on the quality of their love for one another. That's the type of love we have. And I wonder, even if this week there are Christians you need to go and apologise to, people that you've upset, people who you've not treated properly. And I would say, go and put those things right, because Jesus gives the world the right to judge us based on that love. If evangelism is going to be a way of life, then we need to love Jesus. We need to love other people. We need to do that in the context of our Christian family. And that is the most important thing. Evangelism is a way of life, but first and foremost, it's all about Jesus. And in the context of our Christian community, loving each other. Not rocket science. I've probably not said anything new. And you're probably thinking, I came to hear things about doing evangelism. But this is back to basics. We have to do this first. And when we get this right, we'll be better at evangelism, because it will just be what we live. We will live for Jesus. I'm going to finish there, but are there any questions just before we say toodle pips? No?
What's the next?
Are you not going to come if it's not interesting, Kester? So next week we're going to look at actually how do we put this in practice, so the whole mixing non-Christians and Christians together. So very practically, what will that look like? What would our week look like? If you were going to write a timetable, how might that work out? Then the following week is, okay, so we're great at mixing with each other. We're getting our non-Christian friends to mix with our Christian friends. But how do I move the conversation on? How do I get from the small talk of the weather to talk about Jesus? And then the final week is, how are we going to use the Bible in evangelism, being sure and confident that the Bible is how the Holy Spirit works and we'll see people saved. So that's it. Thank you. And good night. Toodle pips, where's your chips?